welcome to the latest Briefings Direct Analyst Insights Edition, Volume 51. I'm your host and moderator, Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inter Arbor Solutions. This periodic discussion and dissection of IT infrastructure-related news and events with a panel of industry analysts and guests comes to you with the help of our charter sponsor, Active Endpoints, maker of the ActiveVOS Business Process Management System.
Active Endpoints is proud to be the charter sponsor of this Briefings Direct Analysts Insights Edition podcast. Active Endpoints is the maker of ActiveVOS, the business process management system of choice of developers, business analysts, IT managers, and end users. ActiveVOS BPMS combines ease of use, standards compliance, and affordability all into one complete and integrated product. ActiveVOS revolutionizes the development and deployment of business process applications. Download a free, fully supported trial of ActiveVOS at www.activevos.com. That's www.activevos.com.
Our topic this week on Briefings Direct Analyst Insights Edition, and it is the week of March 8, 2010, focuses on cloud computing and dollars and cents. We'll dive into more than the technology, security, and viability issues that have dominated a lot of cloud discussions lately, and move to the economics and the impact on buyers and sellers of cloud services. When you ask any one person how cloud will affect their costs, you're bound to get a different answer each time. No one really knows. But the agreement comes when the questions move to, will cloud models impact how buyers and providers price their technology? And over the long term, what will buyers come to expect in terms of IT value? The agreement is that things are about to change, probably a lot, and probably for good. The ways in which IT has been bought and sold will never be the same. So how does it become a different model? What comes when we move to a cloud-based pay-per-value pricing, buying, and budgeting for IT approach? How does the shift to high-volume, low-margin services and/or subscription models affect the IT vendor landscape? How does it affect the pure cloud and SaaS providers? And perhaps most importantly, how do cloud models affect the buy side? Not many enterprises and their IT budgets are yet set up for this shift. Who's in charge of the budget structure and the changes? And how does that portend for a corporate power or politics shift around IT procurement? These are just a few of the easy questions we have for our panel today. Please join me now in welcoming Dave Linthicum, CTO of Bic Group, a cloud computing and data center consulting firm. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Dana. Welcome, Dana. Thank you for having me on.
Sure. We're here also with Michael Kriegsman. He's the CEO of AssureIt and a blogger on ZDNet on IT failures, and he also writes analyst reports for IDC. Welcome, Michael.
Hey, Dana. How are you?
Very well, thanks. We're also here with Sandy Rogers, an independent industry analyst. Welcome back, Sandy.
Great. Thanks, Dana. Great to be here and participating in this timely discussion.
Great. So let me take my first question out to you, Dave Linthicum. How much change should we expect in terms of IT economics as a result of cloud computing?
Well, change meaning we're probably going to initially have to spend more money. I think that's really kind of what the takeaway is from the initial cloud computing projects that I'm involved in. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's about strategic use of technology, and ultimately cost reduction should be part of the end result. But in getting there, we're going to have to spend additional dollars. I mean, I was listening to your podcast with Peter Coffey. We're talking about SOA and cloud computing, and he said something was very profound. The fact of the matter is that if you're looking for cheap IT, we can give you cheap IT. However, you're not going to be able to keep up with the competitive nature that IT needs, or the competitive value that IT needs to bring to your enterprise. So to get that competitive value, you're going to have to spend additional money. So I think that, you know, the fallacy or basically the myth is that cloud computing is always going to be less expensive. I think cloud computing typically is going to be a better, more strategic, more agile architecture, but it's also typically going to be more expensive, outcome.
Why is that? Why is it more expensive on the outcome?
I think because Yeah, I think because it does require lots of changes to the way in which you're going to have to redo your infrastructure, as I write in my book, to leverage newer architectural patterns, such as service-oriented architecture, and that's typically very expensive. And that's to get out and access the services that are available to you on demand out of the cloud. So that's an expense unto itself. You're going to have to retrain and reskill your people within your data center all the way up into your executive ranks on what cloud is able to do and how to manage, govern, and secure cloud. And ultimately, you're going to have to pay for the cloud computing providers, which in many instances are going to be less expensive than on-premise systems, but in many other instances are going to be much more costly than on-premise systems. Ultimately, you get to a much better, higher-value strategic architecture, which is going to add more value to the business, but it's going to cost you some additional dollars to get there.
So it seems, once again, we're asking IT planners and those in charge of IT direction and strategy to, in a sense, make a bet along with the industry, which is to say you'll have to spend up front, but you'll get something far better further down the road. Do you think they're receptive to that? Is there enough trust in cloud computing to make that kind of bet?
I think some are receptive to that, and they understand a long-term strategic direction of the technology can bring value to the business. People who are strategically thinking and companies that are strategically thinking typically find cloud computing to be an easy sell and to something they want to buy to basically add value to their existing IT. Companies that think tactically and quarter-to-quarter expenses and consider IT kind of an expense that they'd rather not have to spend money on are going to fall by the wayside within cloud computing. They're just not going to get it, very much like the Internet was in the mid-90s. And suddenly it's a big, huge deal, and companies got on board 4 or 5 years ago are leading the market, where companies that suddenly are trying to play catch-up football in 1999, 2000, find that the market left them behind. And many of those companies just actually went out of business because they didn't see the wave coming. Cloud computing is going to be very much like that.
Sandy Rogers, it sounds like there's a little bit of confusion. Now, Dave Lindcombe says it's their strategic long-term thinkers that get cloud, and yet some of the discussions that I hear, it's the people who want to get out of the IT business in enterprises that are attracted to cloud. Can you have it both ways?
Well, I think that one of the things that Dave noted was the idea of architecture, which is very important. So there are particular use cases that are building with respect to leveraging cloud now, yet the technology and the architectures need to mature in order to really think about transitioning all of your IT into the cloud. It's learning where you're going to need that elasticity, what is the short-term and long-term outlook for the types of solutions that are being built, and again, to Dave's point, what might be strategic to your organization in the long run versus what you might need to get tactically out the door. So I think it's a balancing act. It's one of many options to organizations to turn to cloud, and it's learning when to use it right and then how to use it correctly.
So it sounds as if it's possible that some of those people who want to offload things, perhaps a certain set of applications, thinking about SaaS perhaps more than what we might consider pure cloud or infrastructure-related cloud, they might get what they want, which is to offload apps and maybe cut costs. But the other long-term thinkers, the other strategists could also look architecturally at cloud and see a much more agile IT capability in the future.
Right. And again, it's being able to look at what are all the different implications as you scale out and who are going to be the users of the technology. I think where a lot of the innovation that we see happening on the cloud is really other providers that are starting to build their businesses on the cloud to leverage that partnership and the network that's starting to be created there. And they are learning that there is a web-scale business to be obtained out there. And that's really where we're seeing the biggest innovation. And a lot of the enterprises are going to then learn from those organizations that have to act at web scale and understand which are the right use cases to put out there and how to leverage it. And what is also really interesting to note, it's more than just technology. It's really transitioning to engage with services and services providers. And those that are attempting to move out there onto the cloud are learning that that is a big piece of the puzzle, and many technology providers have to sort of grow into the role of a service provider.
Mm-hmm. And, Sandy, we saw a lot of similar promises or expectations around services-oriented architecture, say, 4 or 5 years ago. If you do this, later on, you'll really benefit. That was a hard sell. Now we're in a recession. Now we have tight budgets. Isn't it cloud going to be a hard sell as well?
Oh, you know, in some instances, in the short term, it's an easier sell for those organizations that are looking very tactically at what they're going to be able to relinquish out of their capital expenditures. But those that are looking at, okay, well, I need to grow, I need to be more agile, they're the ones that are really looking at the long-term benefits of cloud.
Mm. Hey, Michael Krigsman, you've been studying how IT failures manifest themselves and are difficult to understand. When you listen to these discussions about cloud computing and you hear things about shifts and cultures and budgets, and no one really knows what the cost implications would be, but we're pretty sure that over time it's going to be better. Do you have any kind of tingles in your antenna, any lights flashing? What do you sense?
Well, I think that hopes and dreams are always delightful, in a sense. But we've been talking so far about IT value, and I think Dave brought up the notion of cheap IT. And I asked the question, is cheap IT really the goal? And I realized that that's not what Dave was proposing. But I think for many organizations, there is this tactical sense, as Sandy was saying, to embrace the cloud because they say, hey, our costs are going to go down in this very short term. But to me, the real question, the longer-term strategic question is, how does this new IT infrastructure map onto our business processes and our business requirements looking forward into the long term? And I think there are some mismatches and mismatched expectations in that domain.
And what happens when we have mismatched expectations?
Well, I think that when you have one group that is expecting certain types of outcomes and results, and you have another group that is capable of delivering results that don't match the first, you know, namely between buyers and sellers, then the end result is predictable failure or disappointment somewhere down the line.
So, with that knowledge and hindsight into other business and IT activities, what, Dave Linthicum, do you think we need to do to prevent that potential failure? How do we match expectations on buyers and sellers? How do we perhaps accomplish a sense of value throughout the progression to cloud?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is set the expectations as to what the value is going to bring and where the value is going to come from. I think we have a tendency to kind of focus on reducing costs over the last few years with the recession and all. And ultimately, cloud computing and service-oriented architecture also is about bringing strategic value back into the business in the form of IT. So the ability to kind of align your IT resources to the needs of the business quickly and get into markets fast and delight customers and sell more and create supply chain integration systems that provide with frictionless commerce are really where the value is in this. So it's not about, you know, the number of servers you can save or the number of virtualized systems you can have or the number of public clouds you can sign up with. It's about moving to that kind of an architecture. Within the traditional architectures that exist within enterprises today, they're highly dysfunctional. They're very fragile. They're overly complex. They can't be changed easily. And that puts a limitation on the business. So what we're moving to is something that's much more configurable and something that's much more agile. And leveraging cloud computing is just a target architecture to get there. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to provide less expensive IT, but it always should bring potential value to the business. So the first thing I do is walk someone through, you know, what this really means to your IT architecture, what this really means to the business, and how this is going to provide value back into the business, both in hard costs, in other words, the dollars and cents around the IT expenditures, which typically may bolt up a bit initially as you do the strategic stuff, but more importantly, the soft strategic costs, the ability to get more customers, get more supply chains, add more value to the core business. And that's really where the money is made. And that those expectations need to be set in the minds of the people who are going to pay the bills, the stakeholders. And we're just doing an awful job in doing that right now.
Yeah, it strikes me that it's hard enough with on-premises IT to get a handle on what your actual costs are. There's the short-term costs. There's costs over time. There are 4 to 5 year cycles of maturation around technologies. There's the operations and maintenance budgets on top of the initial. It's really hard to ask any, you know, enterprise to say precisely what IT costs. Don't we muddy the waters even further when we start doing cloud computing in addition to on-premises, hybrid types of models, a mixing of on-premise traditional pricing as well as subscription model pricing? Will we lose track of how to even know what IT costs as a result of cloud? And I'll throw that out to anyone.
This is Michael. Let me jump in. I would ask the question, you're talking about muddying the waters and bringing complexity, and I would say that complexity exists. It's here today. And, you know, if you are not able to keep track of your costs and expenses now, and you add in new elements, the situation is going to get worse, but the situation is pretty bad right now. So does it, you know, from that standpoint, what's the big deal?
Is there an opportunity to make it better?
Well, you know, in some respects, cloud providers, because they're in the business of providing a service, they are starting to become much more transparent regarding the usage in order to help their customers make decisions and plan for the future. So in a way, the ability to correlate the computing that's being used with, you know, what the value is to the business may actually move forward with cloud and put a lot of pressure on those that are providing computing resources on-premise to provide the same kind of metrics.
Dave Linthicum does an SLA model with a price card the size of a postcard help compared to the licensing and maintenance and other hidden gotchas that companies have been unfortunately accustomed to on the on-premises procurement process.
Yeah, I think it actually does help. I think that you know, even some of the on-premise guys who sold the, you know, kind of services, basically renting software, that was a nice, very innovative model, and now we have the same sort of thing within the cloud computing universe. And I think that the pay-as-you-go model of cloud computing, even though it can be more expensive in many instances when you really kind of amortize the cost over many years, are something that's attractive to at least United States IT, not always foreign corporations, but definitely in the United States, we like the pay-as-you-go cable bill, you know, kind of thing that we get, and also the ability to kind of turn this stuff off or move away from it if we need to without having a big footprint already in the data center and things we need to deinstall and millions of dollars of hardware that we have to, you know, sell on Craigslist if the thing doesn't work out. So that becomes a selling point. And really is part and parcel of value of cloud computing, but also can be the Achilles heel of cloud computing, because ultimately people are going to make decisions around financial metrics that may not be realistic. If you look at those financial metrics in light of the requirements of the business, in many instances people are buying cloud computing because of the cost model and not necessarily the strategic value it's going to have to the architecture and therefore have to the business.
Right. So in talking with some folks recently, I've heard them say that the move to cloud computing, planning and thinking and architecting for cloud computing actually helps companies discipline themselves and modernize themselves around security, around green and energy costs, around governance and management, and even into business process management and people productivity issues. Does that make sense to anyone that there are these other paybacks from cloud computing beyond the dollars and cents of the, oh, you know, email box per user per month type of model?
I'll jump in here, Dana. What I've seen is immediately upon speaking about cloud computing, the idea of service-oriented architecture has been brought up much more, and I think what was very difficult to get across to the business and to varying roles within the IT ecosystem about what SOA and service orientation is all about, I think cloud is really giving that use case to organizations and a better way for them to understand it and embrace it. So in that respect, it definitely is moving the bar forward and with a set goal in mind.
Wait a minute. So what you're saying perhaps is that cloud computing is the killer application of SOA.
It really always has been when you think about cloud computing in a broader sense. It's really about taking advantage of network resources and services wherever they exist and to be able to provide and scale to whatever is necessary to support a business process, a business function. I think it's the sharing of the resources. It's that next step in the shared services model, only at a much grander scale.
Michael Krigsman, do you see any indications from your work that the conceptualization, even the theory around cloud computing, is helping organizations tidy up areas that have been messy, such as how to make security holistic across their IT activities and governance as more of a holistic undertaking? What do you think?
Well, I think that for those processes that are automated with cloud, the cloud vendors have security built in, for example. So sure, from that standpoint, security becomes easier. But there really are no cloud vendors today that I can think of that can support the backbone infrastructure of a large corporation across all the functions. And so you end up still having these security problems and so forth. But now your environment is mixed. So some of your functions are on cloud and some are on premise. And so you add it all together, and at least in the short run, there is this greater complexity. Ultimately, if you had a theoretical vendor that could support a wide range of processes and they had a unified security model and so forth, sure, in that case, it would be simpler. But for a large organization today, I don't see that simplicity.
All right, Dave Linthicum, any thoughts on this notion that cloud computing provides a on-ramp to discipline for greater scale across some of these other major challenges like governance, security, energy consumption, and the business process productivity?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm bullish on cloud computing being kind of a catalyst for architectural change, and typically for the better. So cloud, to the point just made, is not great at security and governance as of yet, but in many instances it's much better than the current security and governance in lots of these existing enterprises, which is poorly defined and either non-existent. So ultimately, as people revamp their architectures to leverage cloud, moving to service-oriented architecture, looking at cloud as an architectural option for bit pieces of parts of their data and parts of their processes, they go through an improvement model. So they go through some architectural, create new governance models, create new security models. They leverage identity management versus, simple encryption. They learn to be more secure. They typically they didn't have a chief security officer. They may have a chief security officer if they're moving to cloud. And ultimately, the target systems that are using cloud computing, the target architectures that are leveraging cloud computing, are almost always, that I see, more secure than the traditional systems from which they came. That doesn't mean they're completely secure, and that doesn't mean they're without issues, especially in the cloud computing side. But people make logical choices about what pieces of information and what processes to run in the cloud and which ones to run on-premise based on security models. And typically, if they're revamping into a new architecture, they're always going to be more secure and better governed, if the architect knows what they're doing.
Let's now take a brief pause for a message from our sponsor, Active Endpoints.
Active Endpoints is proud to be the charter sponsor of this Briefings Direct, Analysts Insights Edition podcast. Active Endpoints is the maker of Active VOS, the business process management system of choice of developers, business analysts, IT managers, and end users. Active VOS BPMS combines ease of use, standards compliance, and affordability all into one complete and integrated product. Active VOS revolutionizes the development and deployment of business process applications. Download a free, fully supported trial of Active VOS at www.activevos.com. That's www.activevos.com.
All right, so I kind of subscribe to that as well. I think this is an opportunity for Catalyst, for some of the shifts that we've been looking for some time. This sort of pulls it together. It's like the web as a word pulled people together to understand the internet. Cloud as a word helps pull people together to understand some of the major shifts in IT across a number of different aspects of IT. So let's look at some of the shifts. If we move into IT as an organization in many enterprises, it strikes me that one of the things that's going to have to shift is the way that IT organizations behave and the role that they play. So while many IT organizations focus on operations and maintenance as sort of their core reason for being, and the procurement and development and customization is an add-on, it strikes me that cloud and the movement to cloud can shift that so that the operations and maintenance side is more of an add-on, and that the role of IT becomes more as the definer of the SLAs, the enforcer and governor and policy manager for what constitutes good computing, while opening up more customization and flexibility and agility to the business users. So if you subscribe to that, or even if you don't, what are your thoughts, Michael Krigsman, about the shift within IT culture, and isn't that an important, necessary step to prevent failure as you move towards cloud?
Well, I think that there's no question that, as Dave just mentioned, that driving towards cloud changes the architecture and requires proper governance. And the lack of governance that exists today across the industry is pretty startling. And so as organizations move in this direction, there is simply no question that the cultural dimension of getting IT to work more effectively with the business side and so forth must drive with it, because if it doesn't, then at the end, the solutions that are built with cloud will still have the same set of problems from a business standpoint that current IT solutions have today. And so this is nothing to do with technology. This is a matter of collaboration and communication across these various information silos.
And so to your company, to Assured, it's important to perhaps measure the progress you might be making at that cultural level if you want to recover the investments that you've made on the technology side.
Regardless of architecture, you need to have data to work with if you want to make decisions that are the right decisions, not just based on sort of ad hoc guesses, and you want to get people on the same page. So, yeah, this aspect of it has nothing to do with technology. However, again, the drive towards a unified architecture can be a great motivator to get different parts of an organization focused around these very important issues.
Okay, to you, Sandy Rogers, you've worked with a lot of enterprise IT departments back when you were at IDC and in other capacities. Do you see them making this cultural shift, and do you think it would be welcomed by IT to move beyond maintenance and red light, green light management into let's define the best way to do IT and then give those tools to the business that they need to succeed?
Well, I think a lot of organizations have already been trying to do that, but they were constrained by their own internal resources. So in a way, it sort of opened up the toolbox for them to help solve and help be a partner of the business. I think one of the things that we're finding from those that are cloud service providers that had originally targeted the end business customer. They're working with the CIOs in the IT departments more. They're working through those issues of security and having backup contingency plans. And I think that it's just an, you know, a state of education that varying parties within the IT ecosystem, again, that have to come on board and understand how to leverage this. I think, you know, one of the biggest points, and Mike brought up the issue of, you know, if there is a vendor out there that can support all of this, it's still a mixture of different technologies that have to come together. And that's always been one of the biggest complex roles that IT needs to serve. And right now there's a lot of dependencies on specific technologies internally. A lot of organizations do not want to make those same mistakes with external providers. So it's really looking to the IT group as an advisor to guide them and help them in the decisions moving forward.
Okay, Dave Linthicum, in your work and with BIC Group, in terms of your customer base, are there any lessons or wisdom to be drawn from how IT perceives of itself and may shift in its definition of its role and character as it moves to cloud? Are there any success indicators in terms of the culture?
Yeah, I think the culture that can adapt to these changes and understand that the investment in these changes is strategic to the business are really the cultures that are going to win the game. So in moving to cloud computing, I mean, the patterns are very similar to the on-premise systems. We store stuff, we have databases, and just a matter of where they reside. And so we can get through economies of scale and through some shareability and also additional, you know, very innovative mechanisms that are being done in the cloud, you know, kind of a hand up in the way in which our architecture can be constructed. And so, you know, what I'm seeing is more of an evolution than a revolution. So people that are evolving to leverage bits and pieces of their architecture to move into the cloud computing where it makes sense or around the innovative nature of the cloud and embracing what's going to work for them are the ones that win. The ones that are going to lose are, you know, very much the same kind of behavior I saw in the early 90s and the middle 90s when the web started to pop up. Those who fold their arms and say, we're never going to have the Internet running in this organization, we're never going to be on the web, ultimately missed out. And I think we're seeing a very similar evolution today. I mean, it's a little different. You know, it's more IT resources versus content. But in 5 years, if you go forward, you're going to find that the winning companies are the ones that are more innovative around their IT infrastructure, inclusive of cloud computing. They're going to be more integrated with their suppliers, more integrated with the vendors and the customers that they're dealing with. Their customers are going to be delighted with them because the speed of response, are able to get information to them, able to get their products, goods, and services to them. And they're going to be the real winners there. So those people that have that some kind of innovative nature around these changes can figure out how it functionally works within my enterprise and then how to evolve their architecture in that direction are going to be the winners. The losers are the arm folders and the guys who push back on any kind of technology that's out there without understanding without understanding the value of that technology and how it fits in the context of their business.
Mm. And I suppose there's another constituency in the enterprise that needs to be brought on board with all of this, and that would be the budgeters, those who are in charge of the money and how it's spent and even the planning about how budgets operate and or change. And the reason I bring that up is I have a cousin who's a IT executive at a telecommunications company, and I can't describe it more than that given that he doesn't have permission to talk in public. But one of his frustrations is, as an IT person, is he wants to go out and explore and experiment with cloud and services, but that the budgets don't have any line items for him to do that. That his people who he reports to financially don't like the idea of opening up a whole new set of line items around quote-unquote cloud when you can't take from Peter, that being the already existing IT budget, to pay Paul. And so to your point, Dave, you need to spend a little and invest a little more to get somewhere. He doesn't have the means to get those monies, and he's having a hard time explaining to the budget people why they should. So what message can we take in terms of cloud computing for the business accounting you know, CFO types, whose job, of course, it is to keep costs as low as possible.
Can I just, this is Michael, can I just make a comment responding both to this and just amplifying something that Dave just said? I think this is a fundamental point, that the cloud computing winners are going to be those who combine architectural vision and discipline with superior governance, and who are also capable of making the kind of adaptive cultural and business transformation changes, such as you were just talking about, things like budgeting, for example. Success in the cloud will require a mixture of all of these things together.
So perhaps this is a board-level discussion and not an IT discussion or even a business management or process management or organizational discussion. It has to go pretty much to the top, which I guess is what we used to say about SOA as well.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that we saw was there needs to be a real business case to utilize any new technology, any new architecture. So nothing's really different here. It's really looking into what the organization requires and targeting those use cases that can test it out and test it out when it needs to scale.
Well, I suppose another way to get the attention of the board is through the competitive issues. And if your competitor does cloud computing really well and you don't, you're folding your arms, as Dave says, what's the likely competitive result? Dave Linthicum, any thoughts about a bifurcation in the market between those who embrace cloud computing and those who don't, and whether that will get the attention of boards across the board?
I think it's going to be those people who win in the market around cloud computing, very much like it was. I keep using the, you know, going back 10 years, those who won in the web are going to really get the attention of the board. Everybody has a tendency to love to follow, not necessarily lead. And I think that they're waiting for, you know, 100 companies to be successful with the technology before they, you know, start investing and moving forward. And I keep hearing that over and over again. So it's going to be a rather of a tough sell within these boards of directors and people who are making critical decisions around utilization of new technology, strategic technology, inclusive of cloud computing. You really need to lead with the value. You need to understand there has to be a commitment for ROI from our IT, and they need to put some skin in the game as to the fact that this is going to actually have some kind of a core benefit to the business. And if they're not willing to do that, not willing to take the risk, I don't think that the stakeholders are going to sign off on it. So you need to, if you're in the IT world today, understand that if you're moving to a new architecture, they have to commit to a certain amount of value that comes back to the business. And typically it's going to be a 5-year horizon in the United States, perhaps a 10-year horizon in the Asia Pac. But that has to be shown and that has to be returned. And if it's not returned, then ultimately it's going to be considered a failure. And so you need to start committing to this stuff right now and putting some skin in the game. And I think a lot of people in these IT organizations are very politically savvy and want to protect their positions, and there's few of them want to put that skin in the game right now.
All right. Well, another way that we've seen disruption in the market, and I'll also double down on your comparison to the early days of the web 15 years ago, was that newcomers to the market, whether they are startups or their existing businesses that change their strategy and enter new and different markets, is there a greenfield advantage here that's significant enough to convince people of the power and value of cloud computing as a productivity and agility enhancer? Will newcomers to some markets that embrace cloud efficiencies get such a leg up? And, you know, we've seen this happen with Amazon and retail, Google and advertising, and, of course, there are a number of other examples in across e-commerce. Is that perhaps a likely way in which cloud computing, from a business standpoint, will become a bit more of a priority? And I'll throw that out to the panel.
I'll jump in on that one again. I'm sorry to dominate, but I think that we are going to see, you know, kind of an unfairness in business, and that people who are starting businesses these days and building it around cloud infrastructures and are learning to accept the fact that a lot of their IT is going to reside out on the Internet and the cost-effective nature of that are going to have a huge strategic advantage over legacy businesses, people have been around for years and years and years. They're going to, and as they grow and they start to go public and they start to grow as a business, they get, you know, up to a half a billion mark, they're going to find that they're able to provide a much more cost, much more higher cost and price advantage over their competitors, and just eat their lunch ultimately. And I think we're going to see that, not necessarily now, because those guys are typically smaller and just up and coming, but in 5 years, as they start to grow up, their infrastructure is just going to be much more cost effective to run, and they're just going to run circles around the competition.
So I guess we could call this the barbarians at the gate effect. How do you see that, Sandy?
Well, I think what's really different is startups in the space are starting to learn how to run their businesses beyond their technology much earlier. How to manage that partnership ecosystem is really important to how they can capitalize and grow their business. And, you know, given the sort of the low-cost dimension, the per-usage type of charging that cloud providers initially engage in, they have a lot of startup cost in sort of what I've heard venture funders call getting that flywheel going, and therefore they're looking at both the short term to ramp up and promote that agility and sort of get that low-hanging fruit and then move into sort of that broader scale. And I think that there are going to be a lot of traditional companies out there that are going to be looking at these vendors and learning from them. And, you know, it's really about being able to garner that trust. So large enterprises will often look to the tried and true because they feel they're going to be around for a long time. So for those that are starting up, they need to present a case that they're working well across the entire IT periphery and working well with those traditional providers in order to gain that trust and mitigate risk.
Michael Krigsman, when you look at IT failures, if a startup that exploits cloud computing to the hilt can quickly move from a $100 million a year company to a $700 million a year company rapidly because IT can keep up with them in that it's a cloud-based or largely cloud-based IT, does that scenario make sense, and is there a cloud benefit to avoiding IT failures?
Well, I think that when a company starts, I think both Sandy and Dave hit this, that they are trying to save money, and so they become very adaptable very quickly. And so they gain the experience of what it's like to have their data out there in the ether someplace. And as that company grows, they are able to make better use of the flexibility and the agility that the cloud offers. And so from that standpoint, they do have an advantage over an incumbent. And again, I think that the cultural aspect here is very important, because there are differences in how an organization relates to on-premise software versus the cloud.
Right. Okay, last question, and it's a sort of a follow-up to this last one to you, Dave Linthicum. You mentioned that there's a difference between the way the U.S. goes about IT and business compared to, say, other regions, for example, Asia-Pacific. Now, if this same advantage to being a newcomer to a field works at an individual company level, is there a regional benefit? That is to say, if the United States or any other region were to embrace cloud computing, aggressively move into markets, would they have an advantage on the global scene? Is there a globalization effect of cloud computing?
Yeah, I think they would have a global an effect on the global scene because of the efficiencies to the architecture and also their ability to kind of move quicker around some new technology spaces in some of the European and Asia Pac companies. Again, generally speaking, there's instances of very innovative and very quick moving companies in those areas. But ultimately, it would be about the ability to kind of leverage technology that's pervasive around the world. And what you're going to find is the biggest uptake in any kind of new technological shift is going to be in the United States or the North American marketplaces. And I think we're seeing that in the U.S. right now. The uptake on cloud computing in Europe is there, but it's not necessarily as quick as it is in the United States. And the uptake in the Asia-Pac countries is very slow, typically, as they usually follow new technology. So we could find that the cloud computing advantage that's brought to the corporate U.S. infrastructure is going to be significant in the next 4 years based on the European enterprises out there and some of the Asia-Pac enterprises out there that'll play catch-up toward the end. Also, they're dealing with some rather draconian regulations around data. So, in other words, they can't, in many countries, they can't let their financial data, their customer data, reside outside of the outside of their country. So if there's no cloud computing presence in those countries, from Amazon or other cloud computing providers, then it's illegal for them to leverage cloud computing. And either the laws are going to have to change or they're going to have to figure out some way around those laws in order for them to take advantage of the emerging cloud computing marketplace.
Well, great. We've covered a lot of ground. I want to really thank our panel. Certainly a lot more to keep track of over the next several years to see where the economic and productivity advantages do or don't exist vis-a-vis cloud computing. So let me thank our guest, Dave Linthicum, CTO BIC Group. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dana.
Michael Krigsman, CEO of Assuret and a blogger on ZDNet on IT failures, as well as an analyst writer of reports rather for IDC. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
And Sandy Rogers, independent industry analyst. Thanks so much for your perspective.
Great. Thanks, Dana, and the rest of the panelists.
I'd also like to thank the sponsor, our charter sponsor for today's Briefings Direct Analyst Insights Edition. That's Active Endpoints, maker of the ActiveBoss Business Process Management System.
Active Endpoints is proud to be the charter sponsor of this Briefings Direct Analysts Insights Edition podcast. Active Endpoints is the maker of ActiveVOS, the business process management system of choice of developers, business analysts, IT managers, and end users. ActiveVOS BPMS combines ease of use, standards compliance, and affordability all into one complete and integrated product. ActiveVOS revolutionizes the development and deployment of business process applications. Download a free, fully supported trial of ActiveVOS at www.activevos.com. That's www.activevos.com.
We've been discussing cloud computing through the lens of economics and the impact on costs and productivity. This is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inter Arbor Solutions. Thanks for listening, and come back next time.